And next up on Free Radio 101.3 FM, which is where you're probably listening if you're on your radio, or at freakradio.org, or possibly through the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the March 1st, 2018 edition, coming at you. Today we have almost a exclusive focus on the dissipation, diversion, dispersal, I guess that's the right D to use, of the San Lorenzo campground covered with the fluff and puff of the, oh, don't worry about it because we have the River Street Boneyard campground, which we're going to hear a lot about. And it actually is, there's probably more that I've got here than I can cram into in 2 hours. Plus, there's a lot of other things happening around cannabis, other events that have happened this week that I find of interest. Santa Ana riverbed, I should say, I guess it was the riverbed down in Orange County, and the continuing actions down there by both the courts and the police and homeless advocates to, again, cover their tracks in dealing with essentially a destruction of an existing homeless encampment with no meaningful permanent alternative, no secure, safe alternative. And they're sending them to motels and so forth. We're going to be hearing more about that. And I'm going to try to get, tune in on Sunday and you'll find out. And stay with us today and you'll find out even more.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And as this super rainy Thursday continues, and this show is being recorded 4 or 5 hours before broadcast time, a little more actually, on Thursday evening at 6, it's interesting to look at the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which they usually call the Sent Anal, but today there is the first ever, really, not just sympathetic, but even somewhat insightful story by one of my favorite punching bags, Jessica York, in a story entitled Homelessness River Street Camp Opens. And it has a picture of, well, it has a picture of a guy called Troy Owen and his dog, who's going to be, I guess, part of the street team's hosts, residents, doing the inner patrols, or what you will, of the new barbed wire fenced off, accessible by shuttle only campground that you will not be allowed visitors in up on River Street as you head out of town on Highway 9. But that's not really the issue that struck my praise, actually. It had me really impressed with York. It's rather that she spends a number of paragraphs in the article quoting Shari Agostini. And I don't know that I actually talked to her. I might have. I went out there yesterday and the day before chatting with people because we were told the campground was going to be dispersed. First, we were going to be told it was Wednesday. Then I was told, no, that people are going to have to be gone by Tuesday evening because Wednesday it'll have to be cleared and, you know, graded over and replanted with seedling for the very important commercial events that come up occasionally in San Lorenzo Park. You know, that's more important than the survival sleeping of, I don't know, more than 100 people who were currently, who were living there before the deportation proceedings began. But no, it wasn't to be on Tuesday, and we were next told Wednesday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then when I got down there around 10:30, no, it's 4 o'clock, and the latest is that they haven't been able to even move out the people that they've guaranteed spaces, which have all been filled up, according to the Jessica York, and also according to people on the site. Could be an incoming call here, but could be soon to our studio. I'm not yet in a studio, but let me pause. But it looks like that call was not about the issues I'm interested in. May get a call later from activist Brent Adams of the Warming Center, which I guess is not open in Santa Cruz, but there is a hot meal tonight on March 1st. It's a little unclear. The message of the moment is a little muddled on the usually pretty clear Warming Center line, which, again, for those who want to reach it, is 234-9848. 234-9848. And Brent often answers his phone directly, and so he's actually far more accessible than I found in the past. Many bureaucrats have been. And that homeless legal project of Steve Plaich has been recently. It's been impossible to reach silver-tongued Steve, but I'll keep trying. So it looks like the real issue, and this does come up in this article by Jessica York that I've mentioned, which goes into some detail, and the reason I'm praising it, well, first, the real issue for me is whether the having destroyed the community such as it was at the San Lorenzo Park area by splitting it up and forcing people, those who are really institutionally domesticated or desperate and are willing to essentially surrender their right to have visitors, their right to come and go as they wish by foot, their right to have more than two little tubs of their property, though I understand actually, it's not clear how much they're going to be able to take later, but they're only allowed to take two little, I guess I would call them 3 by 2 by 2 foot tubs of property that, indeed, the city employees were helping them, trucking them from San Lorenzo Park to the River Street campground up on Highway 9, and that's a good thing. But for those who are willing to abandon their right to privacy and also who aren't addicted to hard drugs, and I'm not quite sure about the situation with dogs. I suspect, I don't know what I suspect. I'm not clear on what the pet situation is. It may be more liberal than you know, has been the case in the dubious winter shelter fig leaves that are laid over the main agenda of the city, which has been get the homeless out of sight or out of town, if not then at least out of sight. That has been the so-called shelter alternative for decades here in Santa Cruz, with essentially token shelter, so they don't have the corpses piling up unnecessarily. Or perhaps, and this perhaps was important when I came years ago here to reinvolve myself with Santa Cruz, the protests that people were staging downtown, making the tourists somewhat look askance at Santa Cruz because of its treatment of human beings as garbage or criminals, which is still a pretty large part of the unspoken perception from even official so-called enlightened sources. In any case, a lot of Jessica's article does deal, or some of it, not a lot of it actually, a lot of it deals with just describing the supposed virtues of, or at least nature of this River Street camp. But some of it talks about, as I was saying before, Sherry Augustini, who talks about why, this person talks about why they don't go to the campground. And I'll read the beginning of it. Sherry Augustini was among those packing up their possessions to leave the homeless camp at the San Lorenzo Park benchlands Wednesday morning, when I also went down there, incidentally. May have spoken to this person. Unlike many who remained waiting for a shuttle van service to a new city-run homeless camp on River Street, Augustini said she will not be traveling with a group of at least 60 others to the fenced-in city lot. It feels like a FEMA camp. It feels like a trap, almost. Not like homeless is a normal living situation, but neither is a uniform 8x8-foot tent area with staff 24/7 and searches and all that That's not a normal life, said Augustini, 30. We want to live normal lives as much as we can. This new camp seems just out of this world. If they're trying to get rid of us, they're doing a good job. Now, before I praise Jessica York too much, maybe the last sentence was the kicker for her, because a number of people who patronize the Sentinel, and certainly who litter its comment sections after these articles, are riotously indignant about the mere existence of homeless people in Santa Cruz as a group of skunks, punks, and drunks, as right-wing KSCO commentators used to describe them, or at least one notorious one. And later in the article, after going through statements by Susan O'Hara, who's sort of the city manager's go-to woman on the management of the campground. Underneath her is the titular head of the camp, Chris Monteith, and then below that is a number of people that actually I know personally, from some of whom have been actually Freedom Sleeper protesters, which is kind of encouraging, actually, or it was, or maybe it's discouraging because they're being bought into this, what I call Potemkin Village camp. And as I described before, that Potemkin Village is the USSR's, former USSR's. It's an attempt to make something look pretty for visitors, but actually, it ain't very pretty. It's behind barbed wire. It's actually, that seems kind of contradictory, because it doesn't really even look pretty, this River Street campground. And in a way, it's designed to be unappealing. But again, quoting Augustini, the guy who's not going to the River Street campground, and who really is being forced to pick up his everything he can carry and wheel it around and then try to plop it down somewhere at night, as most homeless people are in this city. I guess, see, the unspoken agenda seems to me to be still be get out of town, you're going to face more of the same, as much as we can, without bringing the lawyers and the protesters down on our necks. Which I don't know if there's much chance of that anyway, frankly, but, you know, that has been a concern in the past, and I think it was one of the reasons why this campground got created, was to get rid of protesters and also essentially desperate survival sleepers in front of the post office. But now they're going to get rid of the camp and eliminate this relatively safe spot for a few, and it was only a minority that were at this campground anyway, a small minority of the homeless. And a place where they could have a kind of community, and it's described by some of the people I talked to. You could get your neighbor to watch your tent while you went off to, you know, use the bathroom, use the porta potty, go buy something, have a meal, connect with a social service. Now, for those people that they're clearing away the campground for, so that there can be a taco festival or a zippity-doo-dah spring whoopee-bang, so that, you know, white folks can come and dance and sing and have a great time. And, yeah, it is mostly white folks. Not so much necessarily for the taco festival. But it's well-to-do folks. We're talking about class here rather than race. Although race, you know, in Santa Cruz does play into some of these concerns. So it's clearly an attempt to get people out of sight and out of town, it seems to me. But again, Jessica York then goes on to, she gives an unusual amount of space to critics, not to me. I didn't get called or quoted, at least not on this article, though I will be talking on Sunday about another article where, for some strange reason, actually, I think it's actually a wise decision, because I've always got wonderfully wise things to say, she does quote me. But she talks about, but the people are actually impacted and actually who are talking straight sense, straight from the heart and straight from the gut and straight from their wet shoes and their wet belongings and their wet sleeping bag and their, we got no place to go, but you're driving us away from the place we've been. And what she says also is what she also quotes Augustini as saying. Augustini, now without the protection offered at the benchlands, she worries that rangers and police who have given the homeless campers leeway in recent months will return to stricter enforcement going forward. She said she planned to return to pre-benchlands life and seek out a new place to camp deeper in the woods. we're people too. There's better ways to try to help us than just shoving us in jail because we have nowhere to go, Agostini said. There's a lot more than 61 friggin' homeless people out here. There's people who can't even come here because there's not even enough room. They've just shoved us in this little box. And that brings us to another point in Jessica York's article. Andy Mills, the police chief who I was concerned might be either pressured into or actually planning to use this dispersal of the San Lorenzo Benchlands camping area as an excuse to go after campers elsewhere because they now supposedly have an excuse. Oh, you know, you can always go to the River Street campground, or no, you can go to the Association of Faith Communities winter shelter for the next month and a half. You know, at least 30 or 40 of you, that would fill it up. There's a total of about 110 spaces at this shelter program for the winter, but it's usually about, there have been 70 or 80 people in the campground, as I remember, the campground, in the shelter areas, one in the Salvation Army area down on Laurel Street, another out on 7th Avenue at a vet's building, a vet center. There's not much alternative for people to go to. And for some people who are hard drug users or people who are outside in vets who don't want to get into these managed, tightly controlled, treated like a six-year-old situations, can't bring your stuff, can't bring your pet, it's have to get up at 5 in the morning. All these onerous rules, which some, I think, in this community unfairly and inappropriately dismiss as, oh, you just can't follow rules. That's not it. If people who are living in houses had to follow these rules, there would be, I think, rebellion mighty fast. But homeless people are victimized because they're in a situation where if they don't accept this, they get the alternative of having their property stolen by police, being possibly brutalized, or at least possibly jailed, fined, their whatever licenses or credit they have removed. It is a form of ongoing criminalization that is used as a form of social control. And it also, of course, keeps the society rolling along, keeps people paying these outrageous rents, keeps people working at these crazy jobs, keeps a war machine running that should have been dismantled and blown up, yes, blown up years ago. And I suppose, you know, we could use more peaceful metaphors, but maybe these war makers have to understand more of their own language. Or actually, it's not really them I'm talking to. So you think you folks know what I mean out there. So, anyway, Mills does say that his policy, that's Chief Mills of the police department, of not enforcing the city's 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. outdoor camping ban remains in place, but he said, you're not going to camp anywhere you like. There's some control here, but he doesn't give places where people can go. And that is really important because it's really important for people to have a sense of community and mutual self-protection. And to do that, you need two or three tents in one place. And what places have you got left? You've got parks that have been criminalized to be in after dark. And now, admittedly, the Parks and Rec for the last 6 months, and a tip of the hat to Mauro Garcia, head of the Parks and Rec, for doing this, have not supposedly given citations, tickets, or stay-away orders for being in a park after dark. Though I have not been able to muster the person power to do the research on the kinds of on the actual citations given out, so I have to take people's word for that and kind of, you know, anecdotal stuff. You hear another phone call. This could be something worth passing on to you. We'll see. So as it happens, I have just gotten a phone call from Nina Rippey, who is the niece of David Silva, and who I don't know personally, but you've been following, Nina, the situation for David over in Maputo, Mozambique. David Silva is a local homeless activist who many of us know has been fighting against the sleeping ban law here in Santa Cruz for decades and engaging actually in personal protest recently, organizing call-ins to city council to try to end this law, which still remains on the books. But David, as I think I reported
we reported together. I don't know if I interviewed you on this, Nina, in terms of an actual, I think we did have a live interview, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Oh, I beg your pardon. Nina, say hello.
Hi.
Hello. He was being held in a hospital in Maputo, Mozambique, about halfway around the world. That's a country in southern Africa where they speak Portuguese as the colonial language anyway, probably a lot of other languages that we don't know the names of. But the hospital he was held in, a thing called the ICOR Hospital, or at least so we were told by phone. And Nina, you were telling me you've done some checking on that, called embassy officials to try to determine that this isn't some kidnapping scam where David's being held prisoner by a group of well-connected criminals. I don't know why they'd hold David prisoner. He doesn't have that much money, so I don't know what the story is. But you say that he was put on an incubator for about a week and a half because he had a case of pneumonia. They gave him the wrong drugs for his AIDS condition, and that began to be corrected by connection with a doctor here. But they have been charging him essentially $2,000 a day for this, which depends on who you talk to, but some say that's very cheap compared to the U.S., but for somebody with David's resources, that's tens of thousands of dollars, I'm pretty sure, I doubt he can afford. But you said you've been researching this issue with the Veterans Administration and trying to get something done?
Yes, we're actually working on an appeal at the moment because his original VA emergency claim was denied, and he has since been transferred to what would be considered like a public hospital, which does not have the greatest condition. So I was able to do some research online and look at some pictures of the hospital where he's located. But we have still not been able to get in contact with him, and he does have an international phone. So it's kind of frustrating not being able to get in contact with him and at least catch him up on what's been going on from what we've been told.
Now, that's the central hospital he's being transferred to from the ICOR hospital. At least we've been told that. Have you actually had any contact with the central hospital to indicate that this has actually happened other than emails from people representing themselves as being from ICOR and from the embassy?
No, I have not at this moment. I was trying to wait to see what information I could get directly from the congressman's office who is following up on this, as well as the embassy locally. They were supposed to give him a few of his belongings so he could reach out to family members or friends, and that has not happened yet. So,
now, is he actually off this incubator? I mean, it would seem strange that we know he's been supposedly on a respirator for, you know, almost the entire time in the hospital, although, strangely, I was told he called his bank several days after he had been supposedly put on the respirator, so there's a little confusion there. But he was on the respirator for until a couple of days ago, right? Or he was taken off briefly, and then they said, oh, it's no good, you got to put him on again. But you've not heard from him throughout this entire period, correct?
That's correct. And when he was on the respirator and taken off briefly, there was no explanation as to why he could not stay off the respirator. Even with trying to clarify, there was never any response given. But he is supposed to be doing well and communicating for the last 2 days. Now, I haven't been able to confirm that except through the embassy directly and the ICOR staff that emailed me.
And I think you told me in an email recently that the reason he hasn't been able to use his phone, and this sounds pretty peculiar to me, frankly, Nina, is that he can't use it in the emergency area because it somehow would interfere with the equipment. So he's been off for 2 days, but has chosen not to call. We weren't able to wheel him out into the hallway to do that. Is that your understanding? I don't quite understand. Maybe you can clarify that for me.
Well, up until yesterday, his cell phone and all of his possessions were still located at the embassy. I requested for either them to have him call me from an embassy representative's phone directly while they're visiting him, or to give him his cell phone so he can make contact directly. And his cell phone was supposed to be in his possession early this morning, which would have been about 11, 12 o'clock last night. I waited long period of time and kept my phone by, you know, by the bed, and I didn't receive any contact from the embassy or from him, which, I, at this point, I'm not knowing what to think. I'm just waiting to hear his voice instead of other people passing on messages about his condition and how he's doing.
Now, you say that you've done some research on the Central Hospital, which is the public hospital that ordinary mortals in Maputo, Mozambique, have to use, and presumably there's a form of free medical care over there of a kind, which we don't have, for example, over here much, except in limited form if we do the ransom through the insurance companies. But do you know, have you gotten any indication? There was a lot of talk from the embassy of officials, at least via email, and on people who so represented themselves on phone, as that, you know, this central hospital was really not a good place, and they don't even have... It should be said, when we say David was put in a respirator, that means he was put into a coma because they were afraid his pneumonia was increasing, and they kept him in a coma for about a week and a half? Is that accurate?
About a week and a half, yes.
And so the claim that there's no respiratory services or no coma-protecting services in the central hospital, you got any more information on that? What else have you found out about the central hospital that David is supposedly being transferred to?
I have not found out a lot. The website is a real low-end website. There's not any information on the front page. The only real information I could find is on Google reviews and pictures. It looks like not too long ago they went through some sort of update. They redid floors and different things. Now, I don't know what the condition is. I don't know how many people... I don't know the capacity of how many people they can take care of or treat there. I don't know if any of the doctors at ICOR are going to be assisting in care for him there. So as of right now, I'm kind of in the dark for, you know, the past 24 hours as far as this new place that he's at.
Well, I'm glad that someone, because I'm certainly not doing it, you are following this with the kind of care and a willingness to... be up in the wee hours of the morning that you are. Dave is a pretty tough bird. He's survived HIV for years. He's survived all kinds of stuff, but I don't know if he's going to survive my criticism for not taking a companion with him on this latest world jaunt that he went on.
Yeah.
David got a settlement for, I guess, on the SSI or the Veterans Administration that allowed him to do some traveling. He's a writer as well as a homeless activist. Yeah, I think if you can definitely keep us involved and ask them to give a call, well, ask him to give me a call if he feels like it. I could split the cost with him when he gets back if he ever gets out of debt from the tens of thousands of dollars he apparently owes for the treatment at ICOR. I guess we don't have any idea what the billing would be at Central, whether they're going to charge him or whether, you know, they're just going to, you know, treat him as best they can with everyone else, and I'm not sure what, we don't know what that situation is, right?
We don't. From what I had heard from the embassy is that it's a no-cost care, and now that's kind of scary to hear that, but, the good thing is he's off the respirator. He's been 2 days off before he's transferred to this hospital, so I'm pretty sure David's body's kicking in and healing, and he will be able to hire a companion once he's well enough and travel commercial airline. That is something that the State Department is going to work out and get him back home.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've also been trying to organize some fundraising, and I was able to contact a couple of donors who kicked some money down too, not anywhere near enough to pay the bills at ICOR to. They kept sending us nightly billings, as I remember. for the thousands of dollars each day that supposedly costs them to keep him on an incubator. It may well be true. I don't know how much these expenses are. But you've been doing a lot to try to hold this together. And, you know, I thank you, and I think his friends thank you. And is there any other updates you want to pass on?
You know, I don't think so. But as soon as I hear his voice and get in contact with him, I'm pretty sure that's going to be a pretty good conversation, and I'll know where to go from there as far as what he would like me to do. I'm willing to go as far as I can to get him home. I think this trip has been long enough for him. I know he's ready to come home as well.
I would hope so. If you can, is there a website people can go to if they want to get more information about this?
You know, the only, as far as the website of the hospital, it's just the Central Mozambique Hospital.
I was thinking more about your website or a website where they could contact you, because you're the person who seems to be doing the most regular reaching out.
Yes, the GoFundMe that I have set up for him. I don't know if you've looked recently, Robert, but I have raised about $688 so far.
Uh-huh. Are you posting reports as well, or is it simply a straight fundraiser?
No, I'm updating there. I have not updated about the move yet as far as him moving to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But let me see here. The GoFundMe is the GoFundMe.com/hospital-care-in-Africa.
And is there a way that you can browse for it, or do you have to actually fill in that entire web address?
If you type in the sorry, Robert, I'm sitting in the car here. Type in Hospital Care in Africa, David's picture should come up along with the GoFundMe information.
Hospital Care in Africa, David Silva, S-I-L-V-A. All right. Well, Nina, unless you have more you want to pass on, I'm going to leave it there until I get a welcome call from either Silva or you, indicating even better news.
Yes, that would be great. We hope to be having that happen in the next at least couple days, so I'll keep you posted.
This is being broadcast at 6 o'clock tonight, sometime between, this should come on sometime between 6 and 8 for you in case you want to hear it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And for those of you who don't know David Silva, this may have seemed like a rather lengthy interruption to the situation for, well, the update on the San Lorenzo campground deportation in the rain that's been happening for the last few days and will apparently continue to happen. But, well, it's my show, and I'll put out what I want, so there. Let's get back to that subject, though. But wait, before we do, I'm going to give us a breather break, a little something to relax by. Here's Randy Rainbow's latest. To get the full impact of a Randy Rainbow song, you have to really watch the video at the same time. It's a parody, and the target of the parody is most appropriately Donald Trump. I wish it were the Republicans and the Democrats, and I wish he wasn't raging on so much about this spurious Russiagate nonsense. But otherwise, he's wonderful. I love listening to him, and his videos are even better. So check him out on YouTube. This one is called Stand By Your Man.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's me. I just have one more thing. Two senior members of your staff have recently resigned amid allegations of domestic violence, including Rob Porter, who's been accused by two ex-wives and one ex-girlfriend, all who say he abused them. Do you have a comment on his departure?
I found out about it recently, and I was surprised by it, but we certainly wish him well. It's a obviously tough time
for his victims.
For him, he did a very good job when he was in the White House,
Quick question: many people are concerned that you are so quick to defend your friends and allies, alleged perpetrators of physical assault and sexual misconduct, because you yourself have been accused by multiple women, and that you're just priming your base for when the time inevitably comes that you are finally brought to justice. Is that true? He wanted to know.
As you probably know, he says he's innocent. And I think you have to remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent. So you'll have to talk to him about that. But we absolutely wish him well. Very good job.
Sometimes it's hard to be a leader.
Remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent.
You can't be bad and not get caught.
Tonight, the President of the United States stands accused of sexual misconduct.
Your friends are awful.
Sexual harassment at Fox News.
Vile and unlawful.
Moore might have been banned from a local mall.
But they're your friends, and, like, so what?
The President has a track record of defending men accused of abuse or harassment.
I'm a loyal person.
You're caught between a rock and, well, your heart place.
Some of the women that are complaining, I know how much he's helped them.
They've done stuff they're not supposed to do.
One of President Trump's top aides has resigned after
allegations of domestic abuse.
Ooh, but don't you scold them for being sleazy old men. Because after all, dear,
so are you.
We wish him well.
He's a good person.
It's a total setup.
Stand by your man. Send out a tweet. Defend him. And when he's wrong, commend him. Cause you've got daddy issues. Stand by your man. And show. Your master plan.
He totally denies it. He says it didn't happen. You have to listen to him also.
Stand by your man.
Just out of curiosity, what are your thoughts on Harvey Weinstein?
As you probably know, he says he's innocent.
How about Bill Cosby?
He's innocent.
What do you think of Adolf Hitler?
Hopefully he will have a great career ahead of him.
Genghis Khan?
He's innocent.
O.J. Simpson?
He's innocent.
What about Gargamel from the Smurfs?
We absolutely wish him well.
Mel Gibson?
He's innocent.
Jack the Ripper?
He's innocent.
Stand by your man and make yourself the victim. And then when they convict him, both be prison bitches. Stand by your man and show the world you love him. Keep acting like a garbage can.
We wish him well.
He's a good person.
It's a total setup.
Stand,
but we certainly wish him well.
By
Hannibal Lecter?
He's innocent.
And I fear we're going to be hearing more from Randy Rainbow. I may have actually exhausted his repertoire in the last few months when I played his stuff, but frankly, he's so funny and so witty and in his way so piercing, although he's got his problems, as I mentioned before, with his, for me, his Russiagate nonsense. But nonetheless, we're going to hear some more of him. But let's jump back to the San Lorenzo campground situation, what remains of it. For the last 3 days, I've been visiting there briefly for brief periods of time during the day. And here's, I guess it was a Monday visit on the 26th of February. So, actually, I guess, yeah, it was the 26th. Here's some of that. So it's February 26th, around 10 o'clock in the morning. So I walked the San Lorenzo path between the courthouse and the footbridge. As I look around, I'm counting the tents. I'm waiting here in the porta-potty line outside these two porta-potties with a camper and a young pooch. What's the name of this pooch?
Honey.
And the name of the camper?
Christy.
And Christy, how long you been here?
Not very long, maybe a couple weeks.
And how's it treated you?
Okay, good. Pretty good.
Lost any stuff?
No.
And is that because you keep a watchful eye or because you think the situation is relatively secure for your stuff?
No, it's because I keep a watchful eye.
Are you able to leave the campground and come back? And is you have someone with you, or how does that work?
Well, me and my friend are kind of sharing a spot, so it's either him watching it or me.
And I'll ask you more, but I want to let you use the bathroom. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with?
Christy.
Thanks, Christy. I'm only estimating, but at least 80 tenths, although there are sometimes 2 tenths to a space. The space is having been set up by the authorities. This is the first rain of the season as I walk through the rain here, and it's it hasn't flooded anything yet, but I guess that's the concern about the river overflowing. It hasn't really come up. Like, folks are kind of on bikes and walking. The seagulls are pecking at the trash, and they're cans at different intervals in the center of the camp. Morning. And here, let's see if we can get more interviews here. We have a report on the sanitation conditions. What's the story?
There's a uncapped needle in there, and the toilet is overflowing with poop.
You've been here 3 weeks. Is that usually the condition of the bathrooms, or is it better usually?
It's usually a little bit better. I've never seen it that disgusting.
And do you think that's because
it's pretty bad usually, though.
Yeah. Situation. What are you going to do in 2 days when they claim they're going to clear this place? Have they been warning you to leave? What's been happening down here?
I guess so. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure yet.
And we're talking now again with Christy Aft, who had come out of the porta potty, and this is a continuation of her interview. How many warnings have you had? What have they done?
Not much. I think just told us that the day is coming, that everyone has to go.
Given you a place to go to? Or?
Yeah, I guess there's a place over by Costco, the shelter.
River Street,
yeah.
Along River Street.
Yeah.
Is that someplace you're likely to want to go?
Not really, no.
And what would dissuade you from doing that? Why would you not want to do it?
It sounds kind of like a concentration camp to me.
It looks kind of like a concentration camp.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? And before this happened, where were you? Were you outside in Santa Cruz? Outside, inside, somewhere
else?
Well,
I was living in my car, actually, but my car totally broke down. So now, I don't know, I'm trying to get another car, I guess.
How long were you doing that?
About a year.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
What was the result in terms of authorities? How did you get hassled? Were you able to effectively do that without problems?
I did it mostly without problems, but I stayed pretty much like out of anywhere that I would be messed with by police or anything.
Any tickets?
No.
Any contacts with police?
Yes.
And what did they usually tell you?
They'd usually like run my name or information and then just say okay and leave.
They wouldn't tell you to move?
No.
Were you in the city limits? The way you'd know is, was it a person in blue or a person in brown that came up to your car?
Brown.
So that would be the sheriffs in the county, probably.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I've never been stopped by, I don't think, the police, actually.
So now you're without a car and soon to be without a spot to camp except for the River Street Boneyard Campground, as they call it. Have you had much contact with other people in the campground here?
Yeah, some.
What's your feeling? Is there much community here at all? What's your sense of that?
There's some. I don't know. It's a lot of... strong personalities, or I don't know if I'd say strong.
Aggressive?
Maybe just kind of noticeable.
Out there?
Yeah.
Extroverted?
Yes, extroverted. Yeah. Extroverted personalities, and so those tend to clash sometimes, you know, when everyone wants to be the center of attention.
Oh. And, did they hassle you for a dog in the campground? I know that there was some claim you're not supposed to have a dog in the campground.
Yeah, I did actually get a $250 ticket for her because she ran out of the tent with her leash, but I wasn't right there. So that sucked.
Did you ever get told by that you had to take the dog out of here?
No, but I said it was a service dog.
And does it, in fact, perform a service function?
Yeah.
It's an emotional support dog, I would imagine, if nothing else.
Definitely.
Plus a guard dog, I see, is guarding you here. And you're guarding it as well. What about other people here? What do you think? What have you heard any other responses to this proposed eviction? What people are going to do?
I don't know. It sounds like everyone's planning on going, but well, not everyone. I mean, just a couple people I've talked to, but I don't know. When is that? 2 days?
It will be on Wednesday, the 28th, if, you know, the city council's deadline is kept. The city council is notoriously full of shit most of the time. I mean, their deadlines are not very clear, and when they're clear, they're not. I suspect they'll enforce it because there's some people that really want it enforced because they think that you guys are an eyesore and they don't like the color of the tents. And it's just... What about a lot of hard drug use here? What percentage of the people here would you say are regular users?
I don't know. I don't know, like, how many people are here and how many are hard drug users.
How many... Has that impacted you at all? Have you been bothered by that, by any... Has that had an effect for you?
I mean, yes, I see it, but it's not... It doesn't really affect me, I wouldn't say.
Like, no one has attacked you and said, no. Give me your money, I want to shoot up.
No, nothing like that.
And what about behavior standards in the camp? Are people been pretty much regulating themselves, or is there... Have you had incidents of problems that have come up that... been hard to resolve, you had to call external authorities?
I haven't had to do anything, but it seems like there's a lot of, I don't know, people yelling at each other all the time.
Have you been able to sleep?
Yeah.
And do things tend to quiet down after at night, or do they get louder? Or
usually, yeah. Sometimes there's always someone talking or something, but usually it's pretty quiet at nighttime.
And, of course, what some people would want me to ask is there any social service outreach here? Did anybody come around and say, hey, can we help you with this? Can we help you with that? Blah, blah, blah. Government wants to do this, wants to do that.
I haven't had that happen, no. I mean, I've had people bring food. And
mostly charities and churches? Or?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you ever use Food Not Bombs?
I've ate their food before.
And what do you think?
They're fine.
Is it something that people here regularly do, do you think, or is it, do people tend to leave the camp during the day to go do other things?
I think a lot of people leave the camp during the day to do things.
Mm-hmm. And I guess...
Work or make money or whatever they do for...
Now, I see a ranger strolling the camp, although in the past I've seen four or five rangers and five or six trucks and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe those were on the cleanup days. But what's been your... contact with rangers, how's that been treating you?
They've been fine. They're friendly most of the time.
They haven't been issuing you tickets or clean this area up? Or that's...
No, I guess if you get a ticket, you get kicked out for the, like, until the next day or something.
Until now, when everybody gets kicked out forever, starting on the 28th.
Right.
And you haven't heard much about, has there been much organizing about people talking about maybe moving as a group to another area to camp as a, you know, as a community protecting itself? Is there any of that happening?
No, but I was suggesting that to somebody and they're like, they didn't think it was really an idea that made sense because there's not enough people that would, you know, stand up for it or whatever. There's a lot of people, like, I guess, that are scared of police or whatever, and so they're not just going to, you know, say, fuck you, basically.
Have the police come down here and talked about this stuff at all? In other words, have they said, there's been talk that the police, and I think really probably some indication, the police have not been enforcing the sleeping ban, the camping ordinance, for the last 4 or 5 months, at least at night. Hi. So the question is, feel free to listen in, or I'm doing interviews for free radio, if you're interested. For free radio, pirate radio. We're talking about the, you know, the evictions that are coming up on the 28th, what people can do, that sort of thing. Yeah. So, what was I saying? Do you remember?
Police not enforcing a sleeping ban.
Do you have any indication that they're going to start enforcing it, or that what are your predictions? Because you're going to be directly impacted by that. You don't have a car at the moment, I take it.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to set up a tent somewhere or be somewhere. Hopefully it'll stop raining, or at least in terms of campers' wishes. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, the police do whatever they want, you know. It's like if they're told to enforce something, they do, and if they're told not to, then they don't. I guess. So,
have they told, have you had any conversations or heard of any second information about what the police intend to do once this campground closes on the 28th, if
no,
it closes?
I haven't heard. I'm curious, actually.
Do you have a phone yourself? Can you be contacted by phone?
Yeah.
So off air, can I get your number and may call you to find out what's going on?
Yeah.
And we've been talking with
Christy.
Thanks, Christy.
Uh-huh.
And I did call Christy back the next day. We got in touch. She was away from the camp at the time. And I've tried to call her today, Thursday, but so far she hasn't been answering. So I'm not sure what her situation is. It's been, of course, heavy rain through much of the night and the day today, so it's hard to say. Plus, everyone was told to leave the campground, at least when I was walking around there yesterday, by 4 o'clock that night. And now it appears from the Jessica York story in the Sentinel, which I've read, as you've just heard, that that's been extended, at least for those privileged few who have got reserved a space, as they like to genteelly put it, in the campground, but they have not yet been able to get their stuff moved over there. A lot more people went onto the waiting list, was my understanding from conversations yesterday. But let's hear some more from, I believe this is from the 27th, the day before yesterday on Tuesday. And again, more information from the now largely dispersed, although I can't say that for sure because I'm not there, San Lorenzo campground.
So it's about, well, 5 to 2 on February 27th, and I'm approaching the San Lorenzo campground from the Water Street side. I've just seen three, I guess maybe four, police station wagons pull out of the road that abuts the campground. It's kind of a county service road. It goes past the large red Sharps container and the bus stop kiosk. And I'm approaching the campground now. We see, well, it looks like a Parks and Rec or city worker bringing stuff to the one of the trucks. It's numerous trucks are out here parked, some on the green. So what's happening?
We're moving the camp.
How's that going?
Everyone seems to be pretty impressed that we're moving the camp to a better location.
Oh, the 1220 River Street area?
Yeah.
So folks are getting help moving their stuff? That's what you're doing
here?
Yeah,
that's what we're doing with the trailers, and then they're getting the free shuttle.
They
get the totes. I think the city's supplying the totes.
And the police were here to...
Oh, there was something else going on underneath the bridge.
That's just an additional...
It was, yeah, there was nothing, it had nothing to do with us moving.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, man. And that was City of Santa Cruz worker, I believe. Here's another worker hauling a bunch of garbage cans with homeless possessions that are to be moved, presumably. Not high.
I am.
To be thrown away. And looks like we have a couple of cops and station wagons still here. So you heard the very positive report. Unsolicited from the guy. How's it going? Oh no, Jennifer. What are you up to, big girl? Quick update for Free Radio.
All right. I'm happy. I'm really happy today because we get to have some human dignity. And I'm happy to be part of this new project. We have a camp set up. It is a small spot, but we have a lot of wonderful services and
tell me about
the
services.
We're not doing a bunch of checks and regulations and
all that. Are you part of the personnel that's kind of doing the camp?
I am the assistant manager of the camp.
Oh, my goodness. And $17 an hour?
And I am a little bit more, but it doesn't matter. I'd do it for free. Because, you know, I camped out with these guys.
I remember.
And that's what means a lot to me, is that to be a part of being able to provide them, it's in between. You know, everybody should have the right to sleep where they want to outside if they choose, as you have fought for so long. But this is a crossbreed between a campground and a
managed area.
It is managed, but you know, our manager, Chris Monteith, is awesome. And
did you know Chris from before?
I did. I've worked with him a lot.
Now, did you ever camp here in San Lorenzo Park?
I've stayed two nights here in San Lorenzo Park, but not much.
The last two nights? Or?
I didn't stay the last two nights. I stayed out here when they first opened.
Has there been any changes? Have you spent much time with the campers here?
I have. I volunteer and serve with Denise. We serve food. The campers are anxiety-ridden every day because the rangers seem to be really on them, like white on rice, and for every little thing. And I think,
for example,
everything from litter outside of their tent to just basically having people in their tents that are not registered or that have warrants, or it's a constant. There's a lot of good rangers that do come out, and I will say that it's about half and half. And it's just a constant fear. They go to sleep at night and don't have any security between other campers just breaking into their tents. They can't leave to eat. They can't go to their appointments without having somebody watch their stuff. And they don't have showers. They don't have running water. And we have that. We have 8 showers. We have a meal service in the evening. We have storage for their 2 totes. And we are providing tents and sleeping bags.
Well, that sounds great. Let me ask you, though, what's the story about not being able to walk up or walk away? I mean, how can people leave during the day if they are they allowed to stay there during the day?
Oh, yeah, it's all day.
And so if you want to stay there and then you have an appointment at 10 o'clock, what, do you get a taxi cab service from there? Or
no,
do you walk away?
It's a far walk. And that we had the winter shelter site there for pickup. And it's too much for people to walk, so the city's given us a little van for shuttle, and we'll just have to try to organize times and people let us know so we can make that happen for them. There's the Route 4 bus line is also across the street, and we don't want to deter people from going to work or going to their jobs for sure. So it's definitely going to be... It seems like we're trying to trap people, but really we're trying to offer them transportation.
How full up is the campground now, the River Street campground?
We don't know yet because everybody has to show up. We have to...
What do you predict at the moment? Do you think, is it largely filled?
I think that everybody wants to come. I think we're going to fill up because the campers have actually, they've said no, 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 and then now they're bombarding. They're scared. And they're ready to at least try it.
Well, it seemed to me when I looked at the area of the camp here in San Lorenzo, I compared it with the area in the Boneyard, or if you will, the River Street campground.
Yeah.
Whatever. Let's pretty it up if we can. Let's not be unfairly cruel to it either. But it looks like it's a much smaller area than the current campground area.
It's definitely smaller, but the storage is outside. You know, it's those big giant boxes. But it's more space to have a community area. We have picnic tables and, you know, covered areas, and the tents that are issued are smaller. So I think we're going to prove the city wrong with the homeless community, because they're going to take care of it, and they're going to show the city that this was a right thing to do, to allow them to have a safe place to sleep.
And if people want to reach you for more information, how can they, if you want to be personally available?
I would probably say just come down here to the camp. We're going to be down here to San Lorenzo at least for the next 2 or 3 days.
This goes out on Thursday, so it's going to be Thursday night, after Thursday night.
Okay, so after that, I think that you would have to contact Chris Monteith, and his phone number's on the city website for any information.
You know it?
Don't know it by heart.
I don't either.
But we can definitely, I'm sure you can look it up, Robert.
Probably. We've been talking with
Jennifer Lanford Brown, and with the city, it's called now the River Street Camp. We eliminated the Boneyard. We want to have a little bit of a
piece. Not the barbed wire yet.
Not that is definitely still there, but
they just don't know how to clip it and get rid of it. I know it's really hard. It takes a lot of work to get rid of that barbed wire.
It's kind of scary. I'm glad to be short because I don't have to rub up against it. But I don't think it's gonna. I don't think we're going to have any issues. I really don't think so. People are going to take care of the spot.
It might be Jennifer's right here.
Okay.
That sounds good. We've been talking with Jennifer, and I'm going to see if I can get a contact number for you off mic so I can call you to get some updates.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah.
Sea Otter.
So you're hoping more people.
And before we hear from Sea Otter, just a few comments. I first remember running into Jennifer months ago in the last days of the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall before the same guy who's managing this program at the top, Martin Bernal, before what seems like a change of direction, if not a change of heart, when he was still harassing and doing whatever he could to drive away poor people from the seat of government under the pretext of, I don't know, protecting his staff and health and safety of... It wasn't really about the health and safety of anybody. It just didn't look good. And that's my interpretation. I didn't see that in any memos. But Martin Bernal is certainly the most powerful man in the city, as I've said many a time, at least in terms of the government structure. And now he heads this program that's a $90,000 a month River Street campground program. And Jennifer is one of the employees. She was active for a number of days in trying to help the Freedom Sleepers every Tuesday night, and maybe even on Survival Sleeper nights. Those are the non-Tuesday nights when people finally decided they had to stay there throughout the week, which ultimately led to massive false prosecutions of people, or arrests anyway. I don't know if they actually devolved into prosecutions under the infamous 647E law, and then phony... You're blocking the sidewalk when people weren't charges, again, to drive and tear and frighten people away, which they did. The police and the Rangers, First Alarm security guards, under Martin Bernal's direction, in essence, did that. Now we have the River Street campground, which, again, is part of a different direction. I want to be clear about that, in the sense that the San Lorenzo campground, while it existed, and Chief Mills' suspension of sleeping ban busts and tickets at night and on public property, generally, although not entirely, has been a different direction. And Bernal has agreed with that, and so has Mauro Garcia, head of Parks and Rec, as I never tire of saying. But it has to be said again and again, because I've so often seen these people as real oppressors of homeless folks in the terms of what they do with their jobs. This is not to suggest that these individuals as human beings are evil individuals, but the position they are in forces them to, or persuades them to, or actually has them doing evil acts, or that in the past that's been the case. Anyway, Jennifer is very optimistic about this whole situation, but, you know, her optimism... There's some justification for it, for the small minority of people who can get into this River Street campground. I mean, you know, showers, at least one meal a day, some transportation to and from, and a bus stop across the street. I guess that means you have to sort of scurry across the street, but you better not be caught walking up to the campground from downtown, or you'll face the music, which is supposed to be a violation of their procedures and rules. But at least there's a bus service up there. You'll be able to leave during the day. They issue tents. It sounds like they're taking steps kind of in the right direction for, again, a small group of people. If this weren't connected with the demolition of the San Lorenzo campground, which seems to me to be the main purpose of all of this, this provides both legal and PR cover for the demolition of the San Lorenzo campground, I would be much more optimistic. But, you know, we do have the assurances of Mills, the chief, that he's not going to suddenly wham, bam, come down again with the sleeping ban prosecutions. But we have to see if this happens. We have to see if these promises are kept. Because when people have so much power, and the police chief seems to have an immense amount of power in our city at the current time around these issues, because he wasn't authorized by the city council to do this, and there was no clear authorization from the city manager, though the city manager signed up for it later, to engage in these kinds of suspensions. Though it seemed very likely the city manager knew what was going to happen based upon the fact that Chief Mills comes from San Diego, and then after that, more recently, from Eureka, where he engaged in similar activity, though the outcome of that activity is still a little unclear to me. I'm sorry I don't get to the kind of research I need to do. But in San Diego, Mills probably found out that courts can successfully stop the cops from any ticketing of the homeless people at all, for at least for sleeping and sitting on the sidewalk or lying down to rest and so forth, as the courts found under the Spencer settlement down there almost 10 years ago. I'm not quite sure of the current status of that settlement, but that, at the time, that followed the Jones decision and settlement in Los Angeles, which was a court decision that said that overturned the laws that said you can't sit, lie, or sleep on the sidewalks of Los Angeles. Now there's a somewhat more limited protection, and indeed, for all I know, it may have expired. I don't think it has, but I think he's wary about that kind of stuff. So it's not too clear. It's clear he is concerned about it, and who knows? You know, he may actually, his sanity and his compassion may have a certain effect on mediating and moderating influence on his role as the police chief, who is primarily a servant of a particular class of people in this city and other cities. That's my view. So we'll see how that goes. What that means for us is keep your eyes open. When you see people camp together near you, go talk to them. If you can, get some kind of phone contact with them. Tell them you need to hear from them if there's an attack on their encampment, or they're being ticketed or harassed or moved along with no place to go, because that's going to be the position of 75, 80, 85% of the people in this community. I mean, Mills also says in this article by Jessica York, he's going to be conducting a survey to find out how many homeless people there are and where they are. A houseless count, as he puts it. Tempted to get a handle on what's happening. That's very nice. But the fact is, the issue really is survival and shelter and the right of people to have their own shelter if they have none and they don't during this period. And that really isn't a right that is being clearly asserted by the police chief in terms of his policies anyway. And one can understand to some extent he doesn't want to antagonize the normal base of the police, which is the right-wing mentality, vigilante, take back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz neighbors, and other such groups, downtown association merchants, who essentially want to use the police to clear away the unsightly and the houseless. And that's how it's been for decades. But now it's being clear that clearing away can't happen. It's because of the willingness of the community to accept the kind of profiteering real estate speculation that has driven prices, rents sky high, and with wages not keeping track on that, because there's no a real labor power in this city, except perhaps from maybe government unions that already now are under serious attack at the Supreme Court level, and who knows, likely to lose their power as well. So, let's hear some more from Tuesday at the last days of the San Lorenzo campground, at least as it was previously tolerated and constituted. We'll sign up, see your camp program sort of manager, a lanyard on.
Actually, I'm just a camp host. I'm using Chris Monteith.
No, folks are getting paid $70 an hour.
$17.
And how many hours a day?
8.
And that's what, 4 days, 5 days a week?
What is that, 5 days?
Yeah. Oh.
Full time. So you should now be able to invite me out to dinner for one night. Or you can cook me a dinner for one night.
I could cook you a dinner.
And you, 'cause you previously...
What would you like?
Let me talk to you about it once I get an appetite.
Okay, good appetite.
And you're looking to fill up the remaining spaces, right?
Yes, yes. What is it, 25?
We have designated 50 spots, 50 campsites, and that would and 100 people can fit there, but not everybody's going to show up who's signed up. And so that's why we're taking the streets team in today. Even two or three of the members of the streets team didn't show up. So that leaves three more spots.
So if I want to come in, I can.
If you decide to sign up, we I don't think we can deny it, but I don't try it.
Yeah, better not. It would be a terrible disappointment if I couldn't get in.
I mean, I got a feeling the city likes you a lot, but they might not.
Not as much as they might.
You don't want to take a spot of one of our homeless people.
Certainly not.
We need to save those spots.
That's been a criticism of the streets team, that they're taking spots that other homeless people could take.
So the streets team is...
They're also homeless.
They are.
Yeah.
But they are getting some money now from this grant, right?
I'm not sure, no.
No.
They're working off the city street program.
But doesn't that involve pay?
I think it's through gift cards.
It's gift cards that are necessity. Like food or, like bus
stuff.
Gift cards that you can buy items that you need to live. And it's not enough. And most of them receive, like, SSI, and they can't make income because they take it dollar for dollar. They take their money. And so it gives them an opportunity to help and give back to their community. And they are going to be helping us clean up around the camp. Outside of the camp, the neighbors, the people that complained we don't want it to be here, they're going to go clean their yards. They're going to go clean up around there to show them that, hey, this is going to work, and we've got people who are going to take care of you, too.
And we've been talking with, again...
Jennifer Lanford Brown.
And the Evil Otter.
And Sea Otter.
Thank you both. Talk to you again.
Guys, we need to go ahead and go.
So I'm now walking... along the San Lorenzo benchlands, sort of adjoining the county building on one side and the San Lorenzo River on another. And it was actually in this space that much of the Occupy San Lorenzo campground was occupying in the fall of 2011. It looks like there's, you know, daytime activity in the camp. I'm approaching the sort of partially... fence enclosed, but no barbed wire, at least not here in San Lorenzo Park, at least not today. Barrier separates this area, just sort of a long, somewhat grassy stretch from the rest of the campground, which is still, I've got a plentiful number of tents. There's a guy mowing the lawn massively along the side of the bank, and people still kind of not in any frenzy to leave, it appears. An anonymous camper here tells me that there is a concern that the kind of the storage vehicle containers are going to be used for people to be able to pack their stuff in are not going to be available until tomorrow morning, and the deadline for leaving is 11 a.m. And she was hoping that could be before then, today, for instance, but so far that's not happening. She says if they're going to force her to leave, well, that's how it is. But, you know, let's at least get the facility so people can pack their stuff properly. Does that cover it fairly?
Yeah.
All right, then.
And as it happened, it wasn't 11 a.m. the next day. Wednesday it was. They changed it to 4 p.m. And then later it appears they're probably still moving out today, Thursday. Not sure if they've moved out by the time this is broadcast. I may try to give you a late update because I may be down there again toward the end of this broadcast. It's possible. Or get a report from someone who is. So we'll see about that.
You did a fine job talking, by the way.
I didn't talk yet.
Yeah, you talked a lot.
Thank you.
All right. So most of the tents, and I passed 10 or so as I walked the campground looking to give away flyers to folks. The flyer I'm distributing talks about what to do about camping tickets. Are closed, so you can't see who's inside. And
for those who want to read that flyer, you can find it online on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. That's the Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media website, or you can get in touch with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at HUFSantaCruz.org is the website, but it's also, the phone number is 423-HUFF, 423-HUF, and I will get back to you. That's also a number to call if you want to get involved with Free Radio, which is the radio station you're listening to. or if you have reports about what's going on to campers around the city, because that certainly interests me, and I want to pass on those reports, hopefully positive reports, to the community. And we'll have more from the Tuesday walkthrough that I did at the San Lorenzo campground after another bout with Randy Rainbow.
Once upon a time, America elected a man with skin so thin and so orange, he looked like a thin-skinned orange. No one in the land was allowed to disagree with him. In the past, when a man was elected president, he would conduct himself with a certain level of dignity, grace, and compassion. But not this man. And although he longed to be respected, one thing stood in his way. A thing he depended upon and loved more than anything else in the world. Even more than golden showers. Allegedly. Tweets, tweets, and nothing but tweets. Hostile, thoughtless, whiny, and irreverent, exasperating, childish, intemperate, and petty. We said no more. He said, oh yeah, sure. But the president-elect, the social media whore. He keeps taunting us. Tweeting us, slandering celebrities and calling out comedians and recklessly rebelling and misspelling words excessively. They should have taken his phone away from him when he spelled honor with an E. Or Barack with two R's. Or dumber with two M's and no
or
B.
Or lightweight with an
or
E.
Phoenix.
Or politicians with an extra T.
Instead of C-E. I mean, this guy is a f***ing genius. So he tweets about his boyfriend, who he won't condemn, and he trolls Miss Universe at 3 a.m. And if anybody questions why he's acting like he's 10, he says,
boycott them.
Well, I thought I'd seen the worst of it. I mean, after all, hasn't Rosie O'Donnell suffered enough? Not to mention poor Alec Baldwin and the casts of Saturday Night Live, Modern Family, and Blackish, Wednesday nights at 9:30 on ABC. But then, one cold winter's night at the Golden Globes, a beloved actress gave a passionate speech condemning the man for his evil ways. And sure enough, he came for her too.
Not Streep.
Streep? He came for Streep. You can denigrate our country, but don't f*** with Streep. Did you see her in It's Complicated, Doubt, and Out of Africa? Florence Foster Jenkins, Mamma Mia, and The Hours? How about Kramer versus Kramer? Sophie's Choice or Death Becomes Her? Or Fantastic Mr. Fox? The Iron Lady or She-Devil? How about Silkwood or An August Osage County Adaptation? Or in Postcards from the Edge? Hello, Ricky and the Flash. And well, actually, I didn't care for that one. Anyway, that's when he hits the bong, puts his makeup on, and regurgitates a diatribe that's three tweets long. Says, I think she's overrated.
Well, I think you're wrong.
Megan says she missed. George Clooney is pissed. And Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn, well, they still look like this. And as for me, well, to be honest, I just couldn't resist. So I laid a little spell on him. That Jackie Ivanka would get laryngitis, and the only person available to sing at his inauguration would be Kellyanne Conway in a swimsuit. A two-piece. So listen, Donald, babe, I hope you catch my drift. You're the president now. Stop acting like you're Taylor Swift. And the next time you're so angry that your wig overheats, remember, take a breath, relax, and have several seats.
Knock it off with the tweets.
You know, just a suggestion.